Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey West. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today we are back with the continuation of the Indiana Jones franchise. Not something I thought we would say on this podcast, but we do have a new Indiana Jones movie out, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. So we will be talking about that today on the show.
I was listening to our last episode where we were talking about Asteroid City, and at the very end, we were talking about how we were going to record this, and you were like, Harrison Ford is 80 years old, and that was kind of where we left it before doing this movie.
He's back as the role of Indiana Jones, though, so, and this movie is definitely an interesting one. I think a lot to talk about with this movie, so
yes,
we'll get into that here in just a few minutes, but first, we do have some news items. First up, some divorce drama involving Kevin Costner. Now, Kevin Costner has been involved in some other drama as well with Yellowstone and kind of butting heads with the creator of that show, Taylor Sheridan, and saying, hey, I might not be coming back. And obviously, like, he's the star of that show. But now he's having some drama in his personal life as well.
Yes, he and his wife are getting divorced. I can't give you a lot of the specifics because I've read a lot about it only because it seems like every day there's kind of something horrible about this divorce drama unfolding. But his wife, apparently the latest news is she has until a certain day coming up to get out of the property, like get off the property, move out. But it seems they are fighting over money, property, everything else. And then when I don't want to say exact numbers and stuff be factual because I don't know what actually is factual, but allegedly she was spending like $100,000 a month charging it on not just clothes and stuff, but like an excessive amount of money, which he has. And then I guess she just has refused to leave the property where they live. However, they've been married quite a long time, which is really sad. And they've had multiple kids together. She is a lot younger than him. I kind of think she's like 19 years younger than him, which can work. I think it's rare that it does, but I think it does work. But it's just, Kevin Costner, I'm not attracted to. And sometimes when I watch Yellowstone, which I am obsessed with that show, but sometimes I don't think he's acting. I feel like that's kind of what he's like in real life. So I could be wrong, but if he's like his character John Dutton in Yellowstone, I wouldn't want to be married to him either. Anyway, so they are getting divorced, and it just sounds very contentious. So everybody think about that before you get married. Just like think things through, okay? Mm-hmm. And then the other divorce news, Jared, I shouldn't even say divorce news because so far it's not a divorce. And Jared's letting me handle this because he admittedly is not up on this. Kyle and Maurizio from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills are separated after 27 years of marriage, I think is right. And Kyle is a woman. Kyle Richards, she was in Halloween as a kid. She has a pretty okay acting career. But she and her husband have been married for 27 years, and he is beloved, and they are one of the few couples still in the Real Housewives franchise that has been married that long, and they're still together. They did specifically put out a statement this week that they're not divorcing, that they're just separated. I usually, when I hear separation, it leads to a divorce, but maybe they'll work it out, and I hope they do. But that's the latest news there. But Jared and I were like, well, no one died this week, at least celeb-wise, that we know of. So we might as well talk about the sad divorces that are happening. Or separations.
Yes. So, and then another exciting thing that happened is we both got to see Taylor Swift on different nights in Cincinnati. So Katie went to the Friday show. I was able to go to the Saturday show. Thanks to her people for providing me some tickets because those were very hard to get. But
Jared was radio on connections, the floor, people. If you look at his photos, like they could have reached out and almost touched Taylor. They were so close.
I know. We were not expecting that when we got there. We go up to the will call window and the lady working is like, she opens the envelope or whatever and she looks at him. She's like, okay, you have floor seats. You'll want to go in at this gate, yada, yada. And then Allison and I were like, what? We have floor seats? That's wild. But I kind of actually liked, I saw your picture from where you sat, which was in the lower level, but up a little bit. I almost like that vantage point more if you're going to the Eras Tour, because a lot of this stuff happens middle of the stage, back of the stage, and from the floor, it's kind of hard to see that. Now, it was really cool when she would come up towards the front, like the surprise songs and stuff, she was like literally right in front of us, which was very cool.
Yeah.
But I think from where you are, you maybe had a better vantage point at like seeing the whole stage.
Well, I thought the seats I got were fantastic. My boss got them, so that was okay. Amazing. I paid for my ticket, but I didn't even get in the Ticketmaster queue like she did. So I went with her. Her daughter went with us. Her 8-year-old daughter. This was her first concert. Like for the rest of her life, this will be her first concert. I did confirm with my mom this weekend, by the way, NSYNC was my first concert, followed by the original American Idol Top 10 with nice. Like Kelly Clarkson, very Justin nice. Guarini. Okay. But NSYNC was my first concert, which I'm very proud of. But we sat, you're right, we were like the second level up, so we weren't on the ground, but we were directly in front of the stage. There was nothing blocking our view. We could hear perfectly. It was great. The only thing that I would say was sad, well, none of it was sad. I had a spectacular time. It was one of the best performances, period, I've ever seen. That includes plays, music, symphonies, ballets, anything. It was one of the best things I've ever seen. But we didn't go the night that Aaron Dessner came. Dessner. And I knew, I suspected he was going to be the guest because he's from Cincinnati and, you know, they are good friends. Mm-hmm. So he didn't play the night we were there. And then the other thing that happened, oh, it was so hot, which is fine. But when we were in the car going down, I think it said 96 degrees when we were driving down to Cincinnati from Dayton. So it was just excessively hot, but I would rather that than storming. And it originally was supposed to storm the whole day and night, and it didn't. Fantastic show. I think if anybody, no matter if you like Taylor Swift or don't, she is as impressive, if not more, than a professional athlete. She didn't stop for 3.5 hours. And like I've seen Billy Joel, who didn't stop for 3 hours with you, Jared, but he was sitting and playing piano.
Yep. Yeah.
And, you know, it's different. This woman is running around, choreography, changing outfits every 2 songs. Spectacular. It was fantastic. So thank you to my boss for the tickets. And it was fantastic. I will never forget it.
I also think that one portion of the show where I think it's Folklore, where she has the house on stage and she lays on the roof. I feel like she just planned that in to give herself, you know, five like, minutes where she could just lay down. Yeah.
But that was near the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
That wasn't even, you know.
So.
But man, she was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a very impressive show. Obviously, she has dancers and tons of choreography, and like you said, she's just going nonstop for like 3.5 hours, just crushing through 40
and
songs
she,
or whatever. So
she's
yeah.
just added like 14 more tour dates for Europe. They said this tour is slated to get over $1 billion, which is the most of any tour ever.
Yeah.
So madness. So. It's complete madness. But way to go, Taylor. I mean, I'm like I've definitely moved up from a half Swiftie, I'll say that.
Yeah, the night we went to, she started an hour early because of the
storms
coming in.
I heard that.
And we didn't see that on social media, so we got there. We got there in plenty of time, but we only saw one opening act, and then I was like, wow, they played a really short set, and then everybody around us was like, yeah, she tweeted that she's coming on at 7. So I was like, okay, well, that's pretty early. But hey, the concert was over by 10:30, which was nice, so and we were on our way. So, but yeah, the Eras Tour was a lot of fun. Very cool show. She's a great performer. She's a great entertainer.
Fantastic.
No doubt.
And all
so,
the
yeah.
all the fans were so nice. Everybody
yeah,
was
yep.
What a great I felt safe. I hadn't been to a concert. Jared, I think the last concert I went to was you, either Coldplay or Billy Joel, one of the ones we went to. Because I don't go to a lot of concerts and I get more scared now because people are insane.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But I felt super safe. But I got home at 2 a.m.
Jeez. Okay. Yeah. So that is a the Eras Tour is a long adventure for sure. But we both had a lot of fun going to see Taylor Swift in Cincinnati. That was very fun. So we don't have any corrections this week. So on to our recommendations. I have a couple of recommendations for this week. Finished the second season of The Bear. Really liked it. That's, you know, a lot of people are praising it. So it's not like my opinion is original there. But solid second season of that show. Expanding on what they're doing a little bit. I liked the character development in this season. I thought it was a very good season. So if you haven't watched The Bear, check that out. And then my other recommend is I'm reading a book right now called Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver. This is a pretty popular book. I'm about, I would say, a third of the way through it maybe at this point. It's very good so far. I haven't finished it yet, but it was a co-recipient of the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction, and it won the Women's Prize for Fiction for 2023. It was inspired by the Charles Dickens novel David Copperfield, which I never have read, but this is kind of like, I guess, a modern take on it or a modern telling, but I don't think it's following it exactly. It's just she used that as some inspiration for this. But it's really good. It's really interesting, really well written. I would say she doesn't really waste like any space, which is nice. Some books, you know, you read and there's just like they just have filler stuff in there for no, just make the book longer for no reason. She doesn't do that. Like every line and every paragraph is important. So I really appreciate that. And it's been easy to read so far and stay interested in. So
awesome.
Gotta give props for that. So
cool. I have read, I think, two or three books by Barbara Kingsolver.
Okay.
She is a very prolific writer. People love her. So that's really cool. I can't wait to hear how it turns out. Maybe I'll read that one. Everyone, sorry, I was choking and dying. Everything's okay now, but apologize if that sounded distressing on the recording. So I only have – I have one book to plug. I am reading several books at once right now, so I think that that's kind of – I'm deciding which ones to talk about. But I read the newest Allie Hazelwood book, which if anybody is a reader or on Bookstagram or – likes the kind of things that I read, you'll love this and you'll know Allie Hazelwood. But she, this is, I think, the third book of hers I've read. All her covers, it's like an animated drawing kind of a thing. It's very similar to like Emily Henry's style of books. But what I love, she always writes about women in STEM. So it's always people that are like physicists or neuroscientists, people that work kind of like in areas of the brain or like really the really concrete sciences. And it's always a romance. I mean, there's definitely like fair share of romance in it. But I really liked this one. I think that she's very talented. She hasn't written a bad book yet. I don't think this was my favorite one, but it was really good. I liked the characters. And if nothing else, I just like that she writes about women of substance. So again, that was, oh, if I didn't say it, was Love Theoretically by Allie Hazelwood. It is on Book of the Month as an add-on, but I did not purchase it through Book of the Month. I got it early from Target because I didn't know if Book of the Month was going to have it. So
okay.
If you're
very
interested
nice.
In that. And then I do have a couple friends I know that listen to this that would care about this that also love to read. But my best friend Kylie and I, every month we do a buddy chat on Instagram. And I felt like maybe I should talk about it because I do talk about books and recommend things. But the buddy chats, all you do is it's on Instagram, but it's not a live or anything. We literally just type back and forth. So it's like you're in a chat, but it's a group setting. So it's like you're in a virtual book club. And it's only an hour long. It's a very low commitment. All you have to do is read the book and you talk about the book for the hour, the appointed hour. But we're going to do a book called The Whispers by Ashley Audrain. We're going to do it July 31st, so the last day of the month at 7 p.m. Eastern. But again, it's very low stakes, but they're really fun. And we always try to pick a book that's kind of either a new release or something so that people are interested in it. They can get it right away. But that is a Book of the Month book, I know for sure, if anybody has Book of the Month. And she's written a couple other books or at least one other book that was really popular before. But this is my first time reading Ashley Audrain. So again, we're going to do The Whispers. And if people are interested in that, just let me know if you want to join our buddy chat. But it's nice. You don't have to – there's no camera or anything. So you could just like lay on your couch, watch TV, and also be in this buddy chat at the same time.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
So those are our recommends for this week. So now we'll get into our thoughts on Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, released on June 30th, rated PG-13 for language, action, sequences of violence, and smoking. Runtime is 2 hours and 24 minutes or 2 hours and 34 minutes. You know, we can't figure it out. I don't know why that's still a thing. Is it the credits?
That one,
is it,
I don't know. This one really made me laugh because I was like, a 10-minute difference?
Yeah.
10 minutes?
Like 10 minutes? I get a minute or two
and
minutes.
Who cares at this point? I don't care who's getting it wrong. I just don't want to have to do a correction every time it's wrong. So I always put the two places I can find it, what the runtime is. But they almost always differ. And I don't understand. I can understand if it's a minute different or like you've mentioned before credits, like if they count the credits or if they count.
Yeah.
If Pixar counts the cartoon at the beginning.
Okay,
you know,
fair.
Not cartoon,
yeah.
Whatever you call it, the short, excuse me.
The short, yeah.
But the 10 minutes here, I was like, what could that 10 minutes have been? But
yeah.
Oh well. Yeah.
IMDb is a 6.9 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes critics 68%, audience 88%. How was the audience breakdown for your movie? Because of my showing, there were a lot of older people, and I read a report that said the box office was a lot of older people as well. So
definitely, definitely older generation. Okay. Like my parents and beyond generation.
Yep. Yeah.
But the theater was packed. I did go to a different theater than I normally go to, and I really enjoyed going to a different theater. It was a nice, I'd been to it before, but I hadn't been in a really long time. And I think that made my experience better. But it was fully packed. It was a smaller theater, but I think it was almost sold out. I went last night, so it was a Tuesday?
Wednesday.
It was a Wednesday. Yeah. So it wasn't a discount day or anything, but definitely older generation. I was definitely one of the youngest people there.
Yeah, same in my showing. I went on a Monday afternoon, like late afternoon, though. And it was still very busy. It was the Monday before the 4th of July. So I think a lot of people had that day off or took that day off, whatever the case may be. So the movie theater was a little busier than normal. So box office wise, $83 million domestically, $154 million worldwide. That's pretty good for its opening weekend. It did cost $300 million to make this movie.
What?
What they spent that money on, I'm not sure.
$300 million?
Yeah, sorry, $295 million.
I'm going to start choking again. Are you serious?
Yeah, $295 million production budget. So
I would love to know where that money was spent, because I think you and I have some real serious dislikes in common that would affect the bottom line budget.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. So the synopsis for this one is archaeologist Indiana Jones races against time to retrieve a legendary artifact that can change the course of history. Okay, the same plot as all the other Indiana Jones movies. This time it's a dial, you know, in the earlier ones it's different objects that he's after, but this one it's a dial, the dial of destiny. So this movie is directed by James Mangold. He's a pretty good director. Steven Spielberg obviously had done all of these up until this point, but this is the first one that Steven Spielberg has not directed. So James Mangold directing this one. And he directed Girl Interrupted, Ford versus Ferrari, which we have an episode on, Walk the Line as well. And he also co-wrote 310 to Yuma, the Wolverine movie, and Logan. And he's been nominated for 2 Oscars for Best Picture for Ford versus Ferrari and Best Adapted Screenplay for Logan. And next up, he's going to direct Juliet and Star Wars Dawn of the Jedi.
Yeah, I was surprised by the Star Wars one, but good for him.
Yeah, they've announced they're doing a couple new Star Wars movies, and I knew he was attached to one of them. So I think all 3 of them are going to be a little bit different, though, from what I heard. Yeah. So that'll be interesting. So.
And I think if anyone's interested, Ford versus Ferrari, I think, was one of our most popular episodes we've ever done for some reason on the podcast. It was early on. It was episode 29 of our podcast. So if you're interested in hearing that, we do have an episode on that, and Jared and I both loved that movie. Jared talks about it more, though. I would say, like, at this point in time, it had a lasting impression on Jared.
It did. And maybe also because I saw Christian Bale and Matt Damon at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. That might have been a reason why as well. They were there, you know, the movie didn't come out for another 6 months or whatever. And we even got to watch a trailer of the movie there at the Speedway, like the media. But they said, you can't film this or record the audio or anything, you know, because the trailer wasn't out yet. But the trailer was like, the trailer looks good. And then the movie came out and the movie was, I think it was in my top 10 that year. I'm pretty sure it was.
Oh, so, I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So,
but I really
movie.
Do, of Mangold's movies, I really like Walk the Line. So I was excited about that.
That's good, too. And Logan is good, too. With
Jackman, everybody talked about Logan.
Yeah. So, okay, we'll take a break here on the show. We'll come back, talk about the cast and our likes and dislikes for Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. We're back here on the show talking about Indiana Jones. Of course, in the lead role is Harrison Ford playing Indiana Jones.
Yes, Harrison Ford playing Indiana Jones. I did look up for fun what that character was named after, and apparently George Lucas, it was the family dog, was named Indiana.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And originally it was going to be Indiana Smith, and people didn't like that, and they were like, you got to change that, so it's Indiana Jones. But he doesn't have a cooler story than it was just the family dog name. But obviously, I think we can relate to it and enjoy it because we're from Indiana. Anyway, his birthday is July 13th, more on that later, but I noticed it was coming up soon, so I thought I would mention it. He is, of course, known for Witness, The Fugitive, the Indiana Jones franchise, and for playing the original Han Solo in the Star Wars franchise. In 1986, he was nominated for a Best Actor Oscar for the movie Witness. It's a great movie. You can currently watch him in the Yellowstone spinoff 1923 and the Apple TV Plus series Shrinking. And then next up, he will star in Captain America Brave New World.
Nice. I've had a few people tell me that Shrinking is good. He's in that with Jason Segel. I haven't watched it yet, though.
I haven't either, but I have heard it's exceptional. So
yeah,
I have
to watch
it.
It's really good. So, yep.
But I need to watch The Bear, too. Ugh, there's so many things. And I'm trying to keep up with it just like that. It's so much right
Real
now.
Housewives, lots
Real
of stuff.
Real Housewives, like every single franchise, you know. I'm doing my part to help TV right now. Next up, we have Phoebe Waller-Bridge. She plays Helena in this movie. Her birthday is July 14th. How weird is that?
That's
so
odd.
So he's the 13th.
Yeah.
She's the 14th. I just happened to look that up on IMDb, and both their birthdays are coming up, but they're a day apart, just years apart as well. She is, of course, an English actress, writer, and producer. She created, wrote, and starred in the BB show Fleabag, which I was obsessed with. I think I'm going to rewatch Fleabag because I've been thinking about it lately. She was also the showrunner and executive producer of another exceptional show on BBC, Killing Eve, which has since ended but was so good. And then so far, she has already won 3 primetime Emmys. Next up, she will act in an untitled Amazon project, Screenshot, and Imaginary Friends. So we'll
nice.
See. Nice. And then lastly, I did put that we, Antonio Banderas, he is important in the movie, but I don't know that he really should be third billed. But we love Antonio. We never get to talk about him, so I kept him in here. He plays Ronaldo. Antonio's originally from Spain and is best known for The Mask of Zorro, The Skin I Live In, The 13th Warrior, and Desperado. In 2020, he was nominated for a Best Actor Oscar for Pain and Glory. He already has 6 upcoming projects listed, including Paddington in Peru, Cleanup Crew, The Last Girl, and The Monster of Florence. The reason I wanted to mention this was my dad talked about this book, The Monster of Florence. He talked about it a couple years ago, gave me a copy of the book. My dad is not into true crime, doesn't care about it, not like me in any capacity as far as like being interested in that subject. But this was all about true crime. But it was about this serial killer in Italy. So he was like the Jack the Ripper of Italy.
Okay.
Like we have, you know, in America, like the Zodiac Killer and the Night Stalker and certain people that are notorious. So he was like the equivalent of that in Italy. Anyway, these two gentlemen wrote this book, Douglas Preston and Mario Spezzi, I think is how you say it. And so when I saw that, I was like, dang, I still have that book. I haven't read it. Dad lent it to me. So I started it yesterday. I've read about 40 pages. It is so good so far. Creepy, creepy, creepy. Like at least when I read the intro to the book, I don't think they've ever caught this person to this day. They just have suspicions about who it is. So that's also terrible. I hate a cold case. It drives me insane. But I was excited about this because it was neat to like not even have to go look for the book. It was already in my house. But Antonio is going to play Mario, who was the lead journalist, investigative reporter on this case. So that'll be really cool. So I wanted to bring that up, and I think it comes out next year, so I'll have read the book and everything and can update you all. This movie also has a fantastic cast, some new faces, some old faces, including John Rhys-Davies, Karen Allen, Ethan Isidore, Seanette Renee Wilson, Toby Jones, Mads Mikkelsen, Martin McDougall, and Boyd Holbrook.
And so on to our likes now. One of the cool things about this is that, you know, this is the last movie that Harrison Ford has said he's going to play Indiana Jones in. Not sure if they're going to continue the franchise or not. From watching this movie, it seems like Phoebe Waller-Bridge might be the successor, possibly, if they do continue the franchise. They might put her in the like lead role. But it was cool to see Harrison Ford. Obviously, you've got to give him respect. He's 80 years old. He's still doing an action movie. He's still playing Indiana Jones. And then you've got, you know, Karen and John, who were in some of the originals in this movie as well. So it was cool to see them pop back up on screen with the addition of the new characters.
Yes. I don't know what it was as a kid about John Rhys-Davies, but he just seemed magical to me. I don't know what it was. I think it was partly his voice. And I couldn't tell where he was from, but he just seemed so neat to me. And like, he felt European or something. Like, I just didn't know anything about him. He seemed mysterious to me. But really like John Rhys Davies and Karen Allen, of course. It was, that was one of my favorite things about the film, was that they came back. Even if they had small roles, it was like getting the family back together. And I think if you're going to do a franchise like this that hasn't, we haven't visited the story in like 15, 20 years, it's cool when you can bring back the original people. And I'm glad they're all alive and doing well. That's awesome. So that was one of my favorite parts about it. Yes, when you talked about Phoebe Waller-Bridge, I think Phoebe Waller-Bridge is maybe one of the best television writers and creators out there right now. I think there is nothing that woman can't do. I would be fine if we didn't continue Indiana Jones. I just think like some things we just need to know when to quit. And Marvel clearly doesn't. James Bond isn't going to stop anytime soon. Star Wars is not going to stop anytime soon. So that's fine. If they go in the direction of making a female Indiana Jones, I can get behind it. Is it something I think we need? No. But if it's Phoebe, cool.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that as well. So
yeah.
And that was another like that we both had, is I thought the chemistry between Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Harrison Ford was very good. Their connection felt very natural in terms of these two explorers, archaeologists who are going on this kind of mission. I thought they played off of each other pretty well. And sometimes that can be hard because there's such a big age gap there between the two of them. But they did a nice job of, you know, making it seem natural.
Yes. And I liked the relationship too. I like this movie did not revolve around a love story, which I'm glad. I mean, that would have seemed very inappropriate, but I wasn't worried about that either. But I love that she was his goddaughter, which is really cool. So Toby Jones was supposed to be her father in the movie. He is really good friends with Indy and they'd gone on all these adventures together. And then at the towards the beginning of the film, we're like led to believe that he's dead, but that Phoebe is his daughter. And then Harrison Ford or Indiana Jones' goddaughter. And so they're reunited. And that's why he feels a need to protect her as well, because she's, you know, essentially like a child, a daughter of his. So I thought that relationship was very believable. And I agree with you. Their dynamic together fit really well.
So the other thing to talk about is the story. You thought the story was pretty easy to follow. That was kind of a like and a dislike for me.
Okay.
I thought it was kind of simple at times, like almost too simple. Like this is a little bit of a spoiler for the plot of this movie. So if you haven't seen it yet, come back. But the basic structure is Indiana Jones has one half of the dial. They're trying to find the other half of the dial. Mads Mikkelsen takes that half of the dial. Then they figure out where the other half is. Indiana Jones goes and gets that half, then gets the other half back from Mads Mikkelsen. And that's like, you know, then they have the whole thing. And that's kind of that's kind of the whole story there. And I just think that's really simple for like a 2-hour and 40-minute movie. It's like, yeah, we need two parts and we just need to put them together. And once we can do this. I just thought there wasn't really a lot of depth there with the story.
I can completely see where you're coming from. To me, the problem was more that they made this 2 hours and 40 minutes. So we're saying the same thing different ways, because I do think it was too simple for it to be that long. But I think I'm yearning right now in Hollywood for simplicity, because I think so many stories – I don't mean to bring up Marvel, but I that's half the stuff we're seeing these days. Those stories are so confusing. Like you
so
have
many
to watch
yeah.
have to watch every single TV show, every single movie. If you don't, you've lost something. Main characters die. There's just so much to keep track of. So when you have a story that's like this, that's just a fun action adventure, you don't even have to know. Like, I did remember Indiana Jones was afraid of snakes. I had seen the other movies. I just didn't see the one with Shia LaBeouf in it. So I didn't see the most recent one. But I'd seen all the old ones, loved them, grew up watching them. They're so good. But you didn't really have to have a lot of background to understand what was going on in this. And it makes sense to me that this dial, why it was important to them. These people are all archaeologists and historians. They care about history. It was neat, too, that Phoebe was like a woman that was so brilliant in her field and knew all the stuff about Archimedes and all of this Greek mythology and these famous people that gave us, you know, a lot of mathematical stuff that I don't understand. And I just kept thinking, oh, great, a movie about math. But at the same time, even I can admit how vital math is to our society. But I liked the simplicity and I thought it was easy to follow. And I was like, wow, this is really refreshing. It's really refreshing to me to watch I didn't think this movie like blew it out of the park, but to me it was like, it was nice to see these characters. It was nice to get some new characters, and it was nice to have a movie that's like action with a simple story that's just family, good, clean fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I can see that. Yeah. So I wanted to give a shout out too to Mads Mikkelsen. I thought he was pretty good in the villain role, pretty solid in that performance. So his villain was, you know, pretty good in this movie. So wanted to give him a shout. And then also another like that we had was the time periods were kind of interesting. They were in the 40s, then they were in 1969. In addition to the time periods, they're also bouncing around to all of these different locations. Now, some of these locations don't look great. We'll get to that in a minute. I don't know if they actually went to half of these, honestly. But, you know, that was kind of fun to see, too, the different time periods and the different locations they were going.
I did, too. The locations were awesome. And it was cool, too. Morocco is really high on my list of places I want to visit in my lifetime. But I did not realize, because I've always wanted to go to Casablanca, however you want to say it. But I didn't realize Tangier was also in Morocco. So that was cool, too. It gave me another place to kind of like add to the list. I also did not know until I went to Spain this year how close Spain was to Morocco. You can take a ferry and get to Morocco. I think they said it was like an hour, which is crazy to me. I always thought that Africa, you know, would be like so much further away, and it's just not. Although Morocco is like a very much a northern tip of Africa, but still really cool. But I love the places that they went, and the time period was interesting because a lot of these movies, we have more movies these days where they go back and forth. They'll show like, oh, something happened during this war, and then it's modern day. I like that this wasn't. It was cool that it went to 1969. I did not see that coming. I couldn't tell from the previews it was going to do that. And it was cool too because 1969, it was the day that we walked on the moon. So it was July 20th. That's my parents' wedding anniversary. So I thought that was neat. Not the same year, but still. But I just thought that was an interesting year, a cool time period to focus on. And I just like that it was different than what I had anticipated.
Do you have any other likes before we move on to dislikes?
Mainly, I just want to say that Phoebe, we have talked about Phoebe, but she was a standout for me. I thought that she stole pretty much every scene she was in. I did think the kid, Ethan Isidore, was very cute. Like, he did a really good job. He played Teddy. I really liked him. But I think Phoebe, really, I know her a lot for her writing and her directing and producing and stuff. I mean, she starred in Fleabag, but it was cool to see her act as well. And I just thought this character was like, it was just perfect for her. And the clothing style and time period was perfect for her, too.
And this is the first time, too, she's really done like an action movie.
Yeah.
She's more of a comedic actress. And obviously, she's funny in this movie as well. And she's a very, very witty and funny like writer when she writes on TV shows, or she's written for movies before as well.
Right.
So, yeah, she was good, though, especially as like a big player in this world going into this with Harrison Ford, who's obviously a legend. Like she held her own for sure. So, OK, on to dislikes now. We have a lot. So that kind of tells you our thoughts on this one. First dislike. This is probably the movie with the worst special effects I've seen this year.
They're
awful.
What? I am not even someone. I'm not like, there's a low bar for me because I don't know how they do any CGI special effects, anything. I'm shocked at anything they can do in the movies these days. And I was like, these are so bad. So bad. I can't even tell you specific things. It was like, it was everything. It was the backgrounds. It was the action. It was car chases and things. Everything was so bad.
Yeah, it was rough. You know, I think I would compare this to like Fast X probably in terms of special effects, but even Fast X had some sequences that were a little bit better than, you know, they had some real car chases in there as opposed to just CGI everything. I think the main thing, like you said, the backgrounds, that was the part that was kind of off.
What was happening?
So obvious in so many scenes that there's a green screen behind them and they're not actually in a spot, but it looks like so bad at times. And then there was like a chase where they're like on a tuk-tuk and parts of that look very fake. In fact, at one point, like, you know, that just didn't look very real. There's a part, again, a spoiler at the end of the movie where they go through this big cloud and they're in a plane.
Yes.
And it gets like silent for a second. And it looked so bad that a guy in our theater laughed because he was just He's like,
even, okay, you know, there was a part. Okay, so when we first are introduced to the character of Helena and stuff, the modern day, it's 1969. It's a parade. There's a huge parade somewhere in New York because they're celebrating us walking on the moon.
Walking on the moon, yeah.
And the parade looked fake. And I was like, why did we have to do a fake parade? Like, if you're going to spend almost, that's why I was flabbergasted when you said how much they spent on this film. I don't know where that, because there's no way that money was, it's not like $200 million was for Harrison Ford's salary. I just, I can't, or $200,000.
$200 million. Yeah. Holy, I mean, they spent $295 million on this movie. I'm guessing Harrison probably got in the 60 to 75 that's,
okay,
million
I was thinking
range,
like,
you know,
70 or 80. Okay.
But still, that's only like a quarter of your, but like what the rest go to, you know what I mean? So,
because it didn't go to special effects. And it's so weird because I even think, when I think of a fun parade scene, I think of Ferris Bueller, one of my favorite movies. They have a parade scene, and I'm like, how could Ferris Bueller do this in the 80s? And like, you guys can't do it in 2023, a parade scene in New York City?
Yeah, or like the another Harrison Ford movie, The Fugitive, has a parade scene, like, you know,
yes,
they're chasing each other during the St. Patrick's Day parade in Chicago. So, you know, it can be done for sure. But yeah, the special effects in this movie just look very, very, very bad.
Insane.
Another dislike for me was the character motivation. So for the longest time, I didn't know why Indiana Jones wanted this dial, and I didn't know why Mads Mikkelsen's character wanted this dial. I was like, why do you guys want the dial? What are you going to use it for? And then at the end of the movie, near the very end, Mads Mikkelsen finally reveals why he wants to go back in time, and it's because he wants to basically become the new Hitler. He thinks that he can do things better than Hitler can and can probably win for the Germans, which I have to give them credit. Is an interesting kind of storyline, backstory for a villain character. I kind of wish they would have explored that a little more, possibly, because that just, you know, is some interesting motivations there, but you get like one line of that and the movie,
right,
has 20 minutes left, and up to that point you don't know why he really wants this thing. Like, why is he traveling to, what is he going to go back to, how's he going to use it? That's never brought up until they're like about to go time travel.
That's a great point, Jared, because I heard that line, but to me it was more of a throwaway line, because I kind of rolled my eyes like, yeah, who didn't want to kill Hitler, you know, get a number, take a numbering in line. But and I also get very tired of Nazi things. Like, I understand how much that shaped society. And I also understand people are still alive that were affected by that war. But I feel like we hear about Nazis in World War II more than any other events in history. And I you know, it was fine. I did enjoy how they tied that into this movie. But I will say, this is the only thing I might disagree with you on about this movie. I thought I did understand their motivations. I thought it was simply that both of them wanted to preserve history and cared about history and these mathematical equations and Archimedes, okay, as a genius. I just thought they were like, oh, I want to preserve history for different reasons because they care about it.
That makes sense. So maybe I just missed that. So,
well, maybe I'm dumbing it down though as well.
Another thing is, this movie involves time travel. And the CGI is so bad.
Like, it's so bad.
The end of the movie, they're in a cloud on a plane going to a Roman battle that Archimedes is involved in. Like, if I'm the CEO of Disney, Bob Iger, and they're coming to me and explaining that this is the finale for our Indiana Jones movie, like our big one of our big franchises, I feel like I would have been like, no, go rewrite that. That sounds dumb and stupid. You know, like, when you can think of that, it's like, why? Why are these people together? Why are they, you know, and then there's like the planes are shooting the ships are shooting at the planes. It didn't make any sense. And it was just a big CGI. None of it was real. It was all just a big CGI mess at the end. So,
yeah, couldn't agree with you more. Time travel, I hate as a concept, because I'm just over that. I feel like that we talked recently about Elemental. And I said my main problem, I was telling my parents about it, I was like, my main problem with Elemental was I felt like Pixar was like, we have to get a movie out this year. So they came up with an idea and then they just did it without giving it a lot of care and attention like they have some of their other movies. And I feel like that's what they did here. And they were like, let's do time travel. Why not? But time travel to me is so overdone. And it's not at all like, I don't believe we could ever figure that out. I don't know that we should. But there are so many unknowns with it that I think it creates so many more problems than it solves. So it's way overdone. It's rarely well done. And it just made me roll my eyes. I thought it was absolutely ridiculous. And then a second issue I had that goes along with the time travel. So Mads Mikkelsen, I think, is a fantastic actor. He is very good as a villain, but I thought he was good in this. I didn't think it was the best thing role I've seen him in, but I thought he was good. Okay, but they're in the plane and they're going to that battle Jared was referring to, where Archimedes is there. And all we see is he looks out the window of the plane and he goes, "There it is, Sicily, 1939. And I was like, excuse me, what? How on earth do you know it's Sicily? And if you're that good with geology, kudos to you, sir. How do you know it's 1939? How do you know you have figured this out? Like the dial, because the dial, when they put it together, there's nothing where you like arrange it and say like, August 2nd, 1942. You don't put a specific date. And so the fact that he looked out a window from God knows how many miles up in the air and said, "There it is, Sicily, 1939. I thought, what? What? So anyway, that was ridiculous to me. And then they go closer and they're like, oh, shoot, no. It's definitely like
Roman
during
Empire.
A siege during the Roman Empire. And I was like, well, yeah, I guess it's not Sicily 1939. Ridiculous.
Little
so
off
that just
there. Yeah.
Yeah. So and I think that that was something that I was like, you guys literally the movie would have been better if you just didn't put that line in. I don't even you just made this look even worse.
Yeah.
Than it
also,
already was.
I think the time travel thing would have been more interesting if they had like gotten the dial earlier. Like maybe Indiana Jones has the whole dial and Mads Mikkelsen's trying to get it, but Indiana Jones and Phoebe Waller-Bridge are using it to go to different like eras of time. Like, and he's just, it's kind of like a cat and mouse game. Like he's chasing after them. I feel like that might've been a little bit more interesting for the time travel thing. You know,
that's a really good idea. Like
I didn't write
this movie,
but
but I would have been much more interested in that. But that Sicily 1939,
that
was I was
very
like,
funny. Yeah.
Are you kidding me right now, Mads?
I have a few other dislikes, just quick things. The riding the horse through the subway looked awful. What were we doing there? didn't understand that
also,
at all.
Also, I love a horse. Horses are one of my favorite animals. But there is no way horses would not react that quickly, that fast.
No.
With that many people, the noise and everything that was going on in a metro tunnel, like there's no way that a horse would have been fine like that.
No, that horse would not have been in the zone.
It like, wouldn't have reacted that
through way. Yeah.
No.
Another thought that part that I thought was interesting is at one point about halfway through the movie, Phoebe Waller-Bridge gets a new outfit and she's talking to the kid and she's like, "Do you like my new outfit?" And it's like midriff exposed, you know, like button up shirt. And then she proceeds to go caving in that outfit, which I'm just like, if she was an actual archaeologist, she would not wear like a thin shirt to go in the cave.
I loved it.
With her midriff exposed. Yeah.
I loved it. No, I was like, man, Phoebe looks so good. I'm not even joking. I really, the whole movie, I was like, wow, Phoebe, you're wearing that outfit. But I do agree.
From
I get
a practical
what you're
sense.
Well, you know
yeah.
what it reminded me of very, very much? Laura Dern in Jurassic Park, the original
that is true.
Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Her outfit is almost exactly the same, except different color shirts and pants.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So that was just an interesting observation.
Yeah. Fair.
Let's see. I also did not like the kid. I thought the dude that acted him was good, but I thought from a story perspective, he just kept getting into more trouble than he was. And I didn't know why Indiana Jones and Helena would keep like they run into Antonio Banderas for 5 minutes and then it's like, okay, we have this kid. He's going to go on this journey with us now. Like we've known him for 3 minutes. Like, is that.
I thought
that didn't seem very believable.
I thought they backed it up a little why he went with them because he said, "What's your relationship to this kid?" and asked Helena. And she made it sound, but that what I thought was weird about that was Helena made it sound like she's essentially adopted this kid. But I also thought, like, Helena, when this movie started, you're in like Brooklyn or wherever we are in the US, you're not in Morocco. So it's weird to me that she's like, "We've never been apart since." And I'm like, you were literally just apart a couple days ago when this movie started, which felt like a couple days, the whole movie.
Also, this kid like knows how to fly a plane. Like,
from practicing simulations. Like he hasn't even flown a plane, but like magically when he is put on the spot under extreme duress, he can fly some planes.
Maverick in there.
Not only some planes, old planes, because it's 1969, but he's able to fly planes from the 40s.
Yeah. Yep. So he's great at it.
Right?
Okay, yeah. Another dislike that we had is this movie's so, so long. And I think the beginning part of it is really what struggles. The ending is actually, like, as bad as it is CGI for its, you know, special effects and everything, it does pick up the pace a little bit in the last, like, 45 minutes. But I thought the beginning 30-45 hour was, like, very slow.
I thought the opposite. I was like, my God. I guess, okay, maybe not. I was interested in seeing where Indy was. I liked seeing the 40s, his adventure with Toby Jones.
Jones. But that train scene was so long, though.
It really was. But I figured, to me, that was like they were doing what James Bond does, where they do like a 20-minute starter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you're like, then it shows like the title credits or whatever. And then you're like, oh, okay, I get it. I thought that's what they were doing. And then when they explained the backstory with Helena, I kind of got it. I do think they could have cut all of that for time. But to me, it felt like, I guess I agree with you, because by the time we got to a lot of the action, I was like, there's still 2 hours left. Like, it just was never ending. And what you and I had already talked about this too. You and I talk about lengths of films a lot, but it's because I can't speak for you. I really think a film can be long if you have the story and it needs to be long. Like Oppenheimer, I have a feeling that movie is going to make sense why it's that long, because you're talking about something that changed the course of history, took a lot of thought, a lot of planning, a lot of people. I still think it's going to feel long, but I think I'm going to forgive a lot of that, whereas this, I cannot. And then the last thing I wanted to bring up, this happens, so many movies and TV shows do this, but this one was unforgivable. When people get shot, Harrison's character, Indiana Jones, gets shot, I think in his lung. I couldn't tell if it was his lung, his heart, or his shoulder, because it definitely seemed to move, which was problem number one. But secondly, he was thriving with that gunshot wound for hours, hours.
And not 80. Only that,
people are dragging him across a bridge. He's on a plane that is being thrashed, flown about. Like, it is a complete disaster. He lands in the middle of a siege that we were told was Sicily 1939, but it's not. But he seems fine. Like, it's just a flesh wound for hours, and then he lives and he's fine. And I just thought that happens in other TV shows and stuff. I hate when they do it, but this wasn't even 1% believable that you would survive this.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, and I like longer movies too. Like, John Wick is one of my favorite movies of this year. That's like almost 3 hours. You know, there's some other ones in there. All Quiet on the Western Front was pretty long. I thought that was very good though. It moved the whole time. So, I just think that if you're going to make a long movie, you just have to pace it well. And there are obvious things in here that you could cut out. And I think my final dislike before we go on to our scores is that, I don't know how you felt, but I just thought none of the, action sequences were particularly great in this movie either.
No.
It has a bunch of them, but none of them are really great. I mean, the train one at the beginning where he's younger, they de-age him. Mm-hmm. I just thought that went on way too long. It wasn't paced very well or something. And then the tuk-tuk scene was, you know, not
that
great.
That was too long.
My favorite part probably was when him and Helena were in the cave. I thought that was the best kind of like true Indiana Jones type exploration vibes.
I felt the same way. That was my favorite action part.
Yeah,
I don't disagree with you. I already know how I feel about this film. There were things I liked. I mean, I really like the character of Indiana Jones, and I thought the first three, you know, when we would have been not even born or I was just born when they came out, those were great. They're great movies. I liked seeing this character and revisiting it, and I will say, like, to its credit, I am so much more interested in these characters and this kind of movie than I am superheroes. So, mm-hmm. like, to me, this was extremely refreshing as far as just, like, for the love of God, I want to watch something that's not a superhero for once in my life. But, yeah, there were so many things about it that were just they were hard to ignore.
Yeah, so I think my score for this one, it's going to be pretty low. I think just because I had high expectations going in and it wasn't that great, I'm going to give it a 56 out of 100.
Okay,
so,
got it.
Yeah, I mean, if they had just improved on a couple of things, even if the CGI was better, it probably would have given it 10, 15 more points. But the fact that they spent so much money and it looks so bad and so long and the story was kind of, at least in my mind, a little convoluted in terms of how they were going about it. Mm-hmm. 56 from me.
I'm going right around there. I actually am giving it a 61.
Okay.
I've said what I really liked about it, but I can't get past the time travel element, the gunshot wounds for days. The CGI was horrific, and it was way too long and just didn't need to be long. There were things I liked about it. I don't think I'll ever watch it again. It's fine. That's about it. But you know what? I'm glad we saw it. My expectations were low, so this did not hurt. Like, I went in thinking this is not going to be good.
Okay. So, I was kind of excited for this. I thought maybe it would, because I liked the original trilogy. I really liked those. So
me too.
I thought maybe it would be good, but it was not.
No,
so.
But Phoebe was great. There were definite things I liked about it. I just think like it's definitely not going to be like top 10 movie for me this year.
I think the other thing too that we real quick that we did not talk about is when you have Harrison Ford, who's 80 years old, and you're making a movie around him, you know, he's limited in what he can do from an action standpoint. So that could have been why some of the action sequences I didn't think were great. It's just he really couldn't do that much in some of these action sequences, you know, so they had to work around that in terms of editing and making the other characters do a little bit more. So I just don't know, you know, at his, you know, we saw Daniel Craig do the last James Bond movie.
Yeah.
And let's see, Daniel Craig is 55. So he's obviously like 25 years younger than Harrison Ford. Tom Cruise is in his 50s, I think, or early 60s, yeah. 61. So, you know, these guys have 20, 25 years on Harrison. I just feel like it's tough at 80 to do a bunch of big action sequences. So,
yeah,
so there's our thoughts on Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. You can follow the show on social media at Podcast Silver, on Twitter and Instagram as well. That's where we're at Podcast Silver there. And then on Facebook, just search the Silver Screen Podcast. You can see our Letterboxd profiles in the show notes to see what else we're watching that we are maybe not reviewing for the podcast. Or if you want to go back and figure out how many stars we gave something that you listened to, you know, two, maybe a couple months ago, you can do that on our Letterbox because we log it all there. Next episode, I'm going on vacation, so we're going to have a little bit of delay, but our next episode is going to be Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning. Now, I said Indiana Jones was anticipated for me. This one's even more anticipated. I think this and Oppenheimer are my two most anticipated of the summer. So I'm excited. Obviously, Top Gun Maverick was very good. I think way better than anybody thought it was going to be. Last couple Mission Impossible movies have been good. Katie's going to watch the first one, so she'll come in with some
base knowledge. Yes, I'm going to watch at least the first one. I will say, I've watched the trailer a couple times now, and I'm actually pretty excited about it. This is very much a kind of movie, since I love James Bond and stuff too.
Yeah,
like, this is very much a kind of movie I'm drawn to. I just hate Tom Cruise, but I can get past it.
Yeah, overlook him and, you know, enjoy the movie if you can. So
yeah, but don't expect me to like Tom Cruise when we cover the movie, because I'll still despise him.
So that'll be our next episode, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, Part 1.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.